Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Welcome to the program. We're thrilled that you're listening. Just a couple of quick highlights that'll come your way in the next couple of hours. Martha Jo Black will join us. She is the daughter of Joe Black. She's the coordinator of fan experiences for your Chicago White Sox. She will tell you how you can have the ultimate fan experience over at a White Sox game.
Pretty fun.
That'll be fun. Tim Cavanaugh, who I thought was a friend of Steve Cochran's,
what's up with that?
I just learned otherwise. Some sort of show business feud that neither of us were aware of. He'll come on. And then everybody's favorite reporter, Dean Richards.
He's my favorite person.
He's my favorite human being.
Reporter.
Yes, yes, yes. A couple of quick things that have happened since we saw you last yesterday. The sad news.
Yep.
Well, yeah, yep. I'm going to go with sad news, although he has taken a very optimistic approach to this. Alex Trebek, the longtime host of Jeopardy, and he hosted a bunch of other game shows prior, has announced that he has stage 4 pancreatic cancer. He talked about it on the show yesterday, and he really was extremely optimistic about it, which, boy, it's nothing but bravery, right?
That is half the battle of fighting cancer, is not giving into it. You know that with your mom. I know that with my mom. And once you give in, you give in. So you have to go at it. I'm worried about him because the prognosis does not look good. Usually pancreatic cancer is discovered when it has already spread because there aren't a lot of symptoms.
I know. That's what I kept thinking, too. Dean Richards earlier was on with Steve and was talking about the survival rate. The five-year survival rate is somewhere like around 9 or 10%, which is really, really low. And I know a lot of people, when diagnosed with cancer, talk about I remember my mom specifically said, I'm going to fight this. And it's not an easy fight. It just isn't. And we wish him nothing but the best. He's a really good guy. I've never had the pleasure of meeting him, but just having watched him for so many Jeopardy episodes over the years, you almost feel like you know him, and you're certainly pulling for him. I noticed about a year ago, he started talking a lot about his successor on the show, just out of nowhere, because he still had, I think at that point, about 4 years left on his deal. He was signed to a very long-term deal to host the show. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he started talking about who his successor should be. And he named a lot of names you wouldn't normally think. You know, I have to be honest. Most of them were names that I was not at all familiar with. Hmm. And I thought it was very peculiar that out of nowhere, he would just start talking about who should replace him. And then I thought, well, he's been on the show, since we were kids. He's been the host of Jeopardy for a long, long time.
The original host?
No, the original host was a guy named Art Fleming.
Oh, yeah.
Remember him?
Yes, I do.
And Don Pardo was the announcer.
I do remember that.
And
didn't the show go away for a while?
And they
brought back with Alex Trebek.
Yeah, for years, Steve. And I remember as a kid, I was so hooked on game shows. I thought that Art Fleming, even though he wasn't the most effervescent, like he wasn't filled with personality, he kind of just got the job done. I went, who could ever this guy knows how to host Jeopardy. He's just great at it. And then years later, when Alex Trebek did it, you go, no, that's how you host Jeopardy. Because even
he's
when he didn't
great.
Know, like he would, just the way he would say things, like he'd go, no, it's the Magna Carta. And you go, oh, he probably knew it was the Magna Carta. I didn't know that, but he knew it. He fooled us, but he was so good.
He mentioned he did an interview about who should be hosting. He is signed through 2022.
Aren't they names that, like, they wouldn't immediately come to mind if somebody said, we're going to recast Jeopardy and put a new host in there? His choices were very peculiar choices.
Here's a quote from Alex Trebek. It's probably going to be a woman, somebody younger, somebody bright, somebody personable, somebody with a great sense of humor. And then he went on to say, so I nominated Betty White.
Betty White would be an interesting choice. And her husband was a great game show host.
Alan Ludden.
Alan Ludden, yeah.
He was great.
Can we play the audio really quick, Wendy, and then more from Alex Trebek? Here's his talking about his cancer, Alex Trebek talking about his cancer yesterday during Jeopardy.
This week, I was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Now, normally, the prognosis for this is not very encouraging. But I'm going to fight this. I'm going to keep working. And with the love and support of my family and friends, and with the help of your prayers also, I plan to beat the low survival rate statistics for this disease. Because under the terms of my contract, I have to host Jeopardy for 3 more years. So help me. keep the faith, and we'll win. We'll get it done.
Boy, God, tough to get him. Through that.
You hear the weird, uncomfortable laughter at that moment?
Yes.
It was interesting to me, Bill, you said he was dropping hints a while ago, but he said there that he was diagnosed this week.
Right.
Now, I assumed earlier that this is something he'd been living with and just shared, but hearing it a second time, maybe he just found out himself.
Steve, that's what's been playing on my head, too, is were there any kind of hints to him that something was coming up health-wise? I don't know the answer to that.
This article from Time.com is dated February 22nd of this year, so not even a month ago, and there was an event at New York's 92nd Street Y Center celebrating Trebek's 35-season Jeopardy tenure.
Yeah. How many years?
35 season.
Wow.
And Michael McKean was the moderator.
Yeah.
So this was less than a month ago, and they asked, you know, who should we call on to host the show once your reign has ended?
Yeah.
So it is kind of weird that he's talking about his replacement less than a month ago. But
right.
As we mentioned, pancreatic cancer, usually when you get the diagnosis, it's already...
It's too late almost.
Yeah.
That's so rough. So certainly we wish him nothing but the best through his fight. Stephen Colbert paid a very nice tribute to him yesterday early in the show. He was talking about how when he was doing the last episode of the Colbert Report, he thought at the end of the show he should just drive off into the sunset, not by himself, but with other important figures. And right away they thought, well, Abe Lincoln should be in the car with me, and George Washington. Those are two great Americans. And then he said to John Stewart, who should... The car has four seats, so it's me, it's Lincoln, it's Washington, who else? And John Stewart goes, well, it has to be Alex Trebek. And they both nodded and went, yeah. And they talked to Alex Trebek, and he goes, I'm in. So that's how the show ended, the Colbert Report ended.
Doesn't he just seem like the nicest man on the planet?
Yes.
Do you think he's really that smart?
Yes. I think he's pretty smart. I don't think, like, he's always played it when he gives the answer, when nobody knows the answer and he throws it out there. He's always like, I know this,
right.
but I'm okay with that.
I would like to see him play Jeopardy.
Yes. Wouldn't that be something?
Yes.
I would love to see that.
I just want to see.
Just so we know.
Alex, we're talking about how much we appreciate you and love you, but before you go.
Right.
Show us what you got.
Take one of the contestant stands. Let's see how you do. All right, we'll take a quick break.
We'll let you even do college Jeopardy.
Right. That'll be better.
I can't believe how smart those kids are.
Oh, tell me.
Oh,
I know.
My God.
All right, a little break, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill Effen, it's Wendy Snyder. How about the job that Gayle King did with R. Kelly yesterday on the CBS Morning News? Did you get to see this?
I would have been very scared if I was her.
Oh, wouldn't you? I mean, he
went off the rails.
Yeah, he did. He did.
And you and I have talked about this before. If you're innocent of something, you want to fight it and really be upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
But this was off the deep end.
There are so many moments that stand on their own. I have a couple of clips yesterday. Now, this happened on the CBS Morning News, although I understand that there's an even longer form interview that will be shown on CBS tomorrow night. I think it's 7 o'clock Central. I'm almost positive 7 o'clock Central. So here's just a couple of moments from yesterday's interview with R. Kelly. Gayle King, again, doing a sparkling job and holding her composure to extremes that I've never seen before. I mean, because he was up and he was ranting and he was seeming very dangerous.
Yeah, I would have been afraid.
She was calm. I don't know how she did it. All right, so here's a little bit of yesterday, of the interview.
Have you done anything that you regret? Have you done anything wrong?
Lots of things wrong when it comes to women that I apologize. But I apologize in those relationships at the time I was in the relationships.
Have you broken any laws when it comes to women?
Absolutely not.
The six-part series interviewed 50 people,
mm-hmm.
family members, your former tour manager, numerous women who all claim that you abused them.
Yeah.
Are you saying everybody in that documentary was not telling the truth about you? Everybody?
If you really look at that documentary, which I'm sure you have.
I have.
Everybody said something bad about me. Nobody said nothing good.
Mm-hmm.
They was describing Lucifer. I'm not Lucifer. I'm a man. I make mistakes, but I'm not a devil, and by no means am I a monster.
All right, let's talk about that for just a little bit. So the understanding is, as you heard the question from Gayle King, is everybody they had in this documentary surviving R. Kelly, they had over 50 people talking about what it was like to be around him and the things that he did that were illegal and immoral and on and on and on. So then Gail King's question was, are you saying that they were all lying? And his answer was yes, that they were all lying. If you're him, do you believe that?
No.
Or is that just something you're trying to peddle? You're trying to sell that, right?
He can't possibly believe that.
Can he? So, all right. So if he doesn't believe it, and I'm with you, he knows what he did, right? So why go on a show like this? What's to gain from this?
That is the biggest question ever, Bill, is why in the world at this point would he have gone on?
Right. I can't figure it out.
I can't either. It didn't make him look better.
And I would think his attorneys would suggest the exact opposite. I would think his attorneys would say, Robert, every time you're on a show like this and they're talking to you, you're burying yourself deeper and deeper. Let's stay away from the media. This is not a time to try to win people over. Lay low for a little bit. I'm watching it and I don't understand his thought process of being on a show where they're going to ask him those questions. He knew those questions were going to be asked, or a version of those questions. That can't be a surprise to him.
The only thing I can think of, Bill, is he wants to plead his innocence. That's the only thing I can think of. And now is not the time.
No.
And that was not the platform.
And she wasn't you could tell she wasn't buying it in any way, shape, or form. Because she was just too good, just asking the right questions and the right, not only at the right questions in the right time, but with the right temperament. Because the crazier he got, she remained. You know how they always say with cops, when you're trying to, when there's a dangerous situation, you want to try to find some way to calm them down.
De-escalate the situation.
Yes.
Yeah, she did a great job.
That's what she was doing. All right, so here's another little, a couple of moments from yesterday's interview.
So I think the point you're making is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you have never held anybody against their will.
I don't need to. Why would I?
Well, I'm
how stupid would it
never
be
held
for
anybody.
R. Kelly? With all I've been through in my way, way past, to hold somebody, let alone 4, 5, 6, 50, you said. How stupid would I be to do that?
I didn't say you were holding.
That's stupid, guys.
I didn't.
Is this camera on me?
Yes, it's on.
That's stupid. Use your common sense. Don't forget the blogs. Forget how you feel about me. Hate me if you want to, love me if you want, but just use your common sense. How stupid would it be for me to, with my crazy past and what I've been through, right now I just think I need to be a monster and hold girls against their will, chain them up in my basement, and don't let them eat and don't let them out unless they need some shoes down the street from their uncle.
Robert,
stop it. Y'all quit playing. Quit playing.
Robert.
I didn't do this stuff. This is not me. I'm fighting for my life. Y'all killing me with this. I gave y'all 30 years of my career.
Robert.
30 years of my career. Y'all trying to kill me. You're killing me, man. This is not about music. I'm trying to have a relationship with my kids, and I can't do it.
What?
Y'all just don't want to believe the truth. You don't want to believe it!
At this point, we briefly pause the interview to give Kelly a moment. His publicist helped calm him down.
So, if you haven't seen that moment, the interview starts out where they're sitting kind of adjacent to each other in chairs facing each other, and then he gets up and he's moving around the room and he's pounding his chest and he's furious, obviously. You can hear that part of it. She remains just seated and calm, and as you heard, just keeps saying, Robert,
like a mom.
Like a mom would do to a little baby,
who's
a boy
who's
having a fight. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yes, do you think I need to do that? That's what we're all thinking. He didn't need to do that.
Right.
I don't know. Has he got himself convinced?
That's part of what I can't figure out.
Like OJ is convinced.
What a perfect example.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think with a lot of people who have that kind of problem where it's just habitual, the more they say it, the more they believe it.
Yep.
It must be true. I've said it 100 times. I've said it 1,000 times. So it must be true. And they almost trick themselves into believing some false reality, right? If he did this many horrible things over years and years and years and years, that's got to register. It has to. And why in the world would so many people come out of the woodwork to say that they were involved in some way, that he did horrible things to them?
There's no
would
reason for it.
Would people do that? I can't imagine that would could happen.
And he wants to have a relationship with his kids. That's what he's trying to do. But he owes $161,000 in child support and is sitting in jail
right.
in Chicago right now. Right now.
As we speak. I'm sure he wants to have a relationship with his kids. There's no question about that. If he's a dad and he has kids, he's got to feel some sort of bond. But then maybe think about that before you do the horrible things that you're alleged to have done, maybe.
Don't you sometimes, your moral compass, don't you sometimes think of doing something truly not this bad, but even something that you know is not right? In the back of your mind, don't you think of your family, like, how will this affect them? And that kind of talks you off the ledge of, like, stealing something or doing something.
For almost everybody, you've got somewhere in your brain, you've got what I always call the long game, which is, don't just think about the moment, think about the consequences of the moment.
Yep.
And that can be anything. You know, just if I do this, how could this possibly end up? What's the best and worst case scenario of how this could end up? So maybe that reasoning just doesn't work with him and people like him. I don't know the answer to that. But
I don't either.
It was so uncomfortable to watch this yesterday. And again, kudos to Gayle King, who really did a fantastic job. I'm anxious to see the full interview. It'll be on CBS tomorrow night.
I'll be watching
it.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
I'm even marching.
Go, go, go.
I didn't expect you to march,
I'm sorry,
Wendy.
I'm getting
Look, you
excited.
Can't stop marching. That's fantastic.
I have been a White Sox fan. My grandfather was a White Sox fan and watched the games when Harry Carey was announcing on his little black and white TV with a hanger for an antenna.
Sure.
And you are what your family is, usually. And I am a White Sox fan, and in the studio with us right now, the coordinator of fan experiences for our Chicago White Sox, Martha Jo Black. How are you?
Good morning.
Thanks
I'm so
for being here, Martha
be here.
Jo. You did a very wise thing. You brought a ton of gifts for both Wendy and myself. What a great way to bring yourself into the fold.
I was raised well, you know. And you should always wear a new White Sox hat, you know. So
yeah.
We want to give you some things.
Can we talk about how you were raised for just a second? Your dad, the great Jo Black, you've written a book about your dad called Jo Black, More Than a Dodger. A fine ball player, and as you and I were discussing, movie star good looks on your dad.
Totally.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a problem.
Yeah.
But no, my dad was very good looking. A lot of people thought he and Jackie Robinson looked very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Together, you knew the difference. My dad was 6'2.5". I think Jackie was a little bit shorter. And they weren't identical, but in pictures, people are like, oh. It's a funny story that's in my book that when Jackie's funeral, that my dad was there. And there was a woman in line to pay her respects, and she goes, why are they lying? Jackie Robinson's not dead. He's right here.
Oh, man.
My dad's like, no, I'm Jo Black. She goes, no, you're not. You are Jackie Robinson. Security had to remove her from the memorial.
That's not good.
I was like, that was horrible.
That's not good. What was your dad's era of play? What were the years he was a major league ball player?
He played 1952 to 1957.
Yeah.
He obviously played in the Negro Leagues pre, also the Cuban Winter League.
Hmm.
So, and technically what I was told that we put in the book, that the Dodgers, Brooklyn Dodgers, really wanted Jim Gilliam, and Gilliam wasn't comfortable enough with being around a mixture of people, where my dad was, since he grew up in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And so they called him up, and he just happened to get lucky and had a really hard fastball.
Yeah. Amazing.
So his history of being a Dodger, did that push you into wanting to work in baseball in some way?
No.
It didn't.
How did this happen?
It's very funny. My dad, when I was growing up, because I'm a oops, was in
nice to meet you.
You know, yeah, I know, and I'm really funny. But no, he was in corporate America. So all I knew was somebody who's like, okay, I was a school teacher at one point. Yeah, I played baseball. And I was like, I met Dusty Baker when he played for the Dodgers. I was like, you look nothing like a baseball player. My dad was 6'2.5", over 300 pounds. And I was like, you're so funny, Dad. You know, and he was like, no, kid, I really was. And he autographed a picture to me. Said, kid, this is a body you had no idea your dad had.
Oh.
And then my friends were like, your dad is so good looking. I was like, oh, my God, please get out of my house. That is gross. You know, so I did not want to get into baseball. I wasn't driving saying, oh, I have to work in baseball. My dad explained to me that baseball was like two great parents. It was hard on you sometimes, but it treated you extremely well.
Great analogy.
And it loves you. And he grew up that when he was little, and they only had radio, really, back in the day, that he heard, when Hank Greenberg hit the home run and how excited people got. Yeah. And he's like, I want to make people happy like that.
Oh. Now, because of the timeline of your dad emerging as a ball player, he probably, as a kid, didn't think he stood any kind of a chance of playing in the major leagues. The Negro Leagues, yes, but he probably didn't think he could play
that
in the major
correct.
Leagues.
That is correct. When he was in his high school, Hubbard, in New Jersey, the scouts all came, and my dad was one of the best players. And my dad was like, so is anybody, are you guys going to talk to me? And they're like, no. Color guys don't play. And my dad really didn't realize that because he looked at the baseball cards because it was just the player.
Yeah.
It didn't matter about color because he grew up in a mixed neighborhood. You just were all poor. So he was like, I never paid attention to that.
Oh.
And so he, but I will say it's kind of funny when my dad was a starting pitcher at the first game in the 1952 World Series. When he was on the pitching mound, he told me, he was like, God, I wish I could get that agent a ticket here. That scout, excuse me. You know what I mean? It's one of those things that you're like, what you dream, you can achieve.
Oh, yeah.
That is really true.
Yeah.
I am a White Sox fan. I love bringing my family there, especially when they were little. I love the fundamentals that's going on. But now adults can partake in some fun as well. Tell us about the Chicago White Sox fan experience.
We have like over 20 fan experiences. We have a sale right now until the end of June on 6 of them. So people can get on the field early to watch batting practice. Even if it's not on sale, if you really want and you're a great business person, you can even have lunch or dinner with Jerry Reinsdorf. Or, as your favorite, Wendy, you could bid in the broadcast booth and sit with Ed and DJ for a little
bit. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be awesome.
You know, and you can see how they interact on air. And it's kind of nice because then you see Paul Zering, who's our engineer, you know, at the game.
I love Paul.
And and it makes everything more personable and you can see things and you're like, oh my gosh, and you're right behind home plate. So you understand how they call things and how Ed and DJ, as I joke around, are the best fake married couple on radio because they play off each other so well.
Yes, they do.
And then you also get to meet Jason Benetti and Steve Stone.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Does Reinsdorf know that there's a chance that a fan will be having dinner with him, or do they just spring it on him at the last minute?
I warn him, and then he's like, well, you're going to eat with us too. And I was like, I don't know them. They just called me. He goes, that's nice. You're going to eat with us. So I've met a lot of nice people.
Oh, good.
since I have sold that a few times, and a lot of business people and other fans. They're like, so what made you get into White Sox? What made you want to be baseball? And Jerry's honest. He like fell in love with the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm very honest. Obviously, I look just like my father, as you see. And, you know, it's one of those things that I want to make everybody happy.
That's excellent. The White Sox seem to be going out of their way to be extremely fan-friendly. You see that, don't you?
Yeah. Yes, we definitely do. I mean, there's like a great new spot that's coming up, the Goose Island.
Yeah.
That's going to be on the 100 level. It's 150 seats, wait staff. They have a social area up there as well. They will have the first three rows, I believe, have their own TVs. Like a plasma that I was like, I can't wait for that to go on sale at Target that are going to be there. You could also charge your phone and everything else. So it'll be kind of interesting. So hopefully, and knock on wood, that we will also try to do something like a match.com type of thing that people can meet there to do a ticket program like that.
That's outstanding. Good.
I think I found my experience that I want to do.
Okay, which one is that?
The adult broadcast experience. You use the PA system. You will announce the gates to the ballpark being opened. And then for one full inning, you will announce the players coming to bat.
Yeah, so you actually take Gene Honda's job.
And this is during a real game.
Real game.
Oh,
we normally start like in the second inning. And Gene Honda sits next to you, and our game operations person's right there. So it's kind of nice. You get to announce things, and people in the stands are like, who is that? And I can tell you, Saturday and Sundays, especially Sundays, kids do that.
Yeah, that's so adorable.
Because it's
something they'll remember their whole life.
To be over 13, so you're safe.
I'm in. I can do that one.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
Physically.
Four times, actually.
Yeah.
Martha Jo Black is here, coordinator of fan experiences for your Chicago White Sox, the co-author of Jo Black, More Than Just a Dodger. We'll pick up this conversation in just a little bit.
I am completely covered in goosebumps.
Sure.
I'm thinking back to 2005.
Yes.
I'm thinking of what a team. Aaron Rowan, Holly Konerko,
AJ Pruszynski.
Do you love when he's on your team, AJ?
Yes.
I love him slightly less when he's on another team.
Correct.
Just slightly less.
And my crush, Joe Creedy.
Joe Creedy.
The third baseman on the hot corner.
Yeah. What a team.
Martha Jo Black in the studio with us, coordinator of fan experiences for the Chicago White Sox. You were just telling us something off the air. Going to a baseball game is great. It can be greater.
No, that's true. I try to make things more personable for people. It's when I've been with the White Sox since 93, and I left, and then I came back. Very good timing on my part.
Yes.
I came back in 2004. I had a client call me. She goes, I want to do something special for my husband, because he used to come to White Sox games with his dad. His dad just passed away. And I was like, okay. She goes, and I would like to maybe do something. Like, can we do a plaque or something? So I was dealing with people in the office, and I'm like, can we do this? Can we whatever? And they're like, yeah, we can do it. And I think it was like $40. That was then. Mm-hmm. It was a very different price probably in 2019. Mm-hmm. And so I had it. I was like, oh, so I'm going to give it to you, and I'll get you both on the field. And she goes, well, his favorite player was Harold Baines. And I was like, oh, okay. I'll have Harold give it to him.
Oh.
And so I said, Harold, can you do this? He goes, all right, because, you know, he's kind of shy.
Yes.
Okay, do I have to talk? I was like, no, just say hi. He goes, all right. So he walked over, and he was looking at the field, the gentleman. Harold came actually from the dugout, and he like tapped him on his shoulder, and the guy turned around. He goes, and he goes, hi, I'd like to give you this. And he read it, and the adult man, which made my heart melt, started to cry.
Of course he did.
Because it reminded me, his wife put everything that his father told him at a game on that plaque that Harold gave him. And it was very personable, and I'm hoping that he still remembers that to this day. I've done weddings there.
I'm guessing he remembers it.
I hope so.
That's amazing. Great. Wasn't it great to see Harold Baines elected into the Hall of Fame? Wasn't that magical?
Gosh, that was like unbelievable. We have so, in a great way, we have so many Hall of Fame players. I'm so excited.
Yeah, excellent.
I am loving Yolmer Sanchez because he's the biggest prankster of all time.
So fun, best attitude, and I will tell you, he and Tim Anderson have joked around together before, and I'm sitting there going, I used to be like that when I was in my 20s, you know, but it's amazing. They are so fun.
Martha Jo, you're the one who comes up with these fan experiences. This is your baby, right?
I created most of them.
Yeah.
When I came back, we only had four.
And now there are?
Like 27.
Amazing. Great.
All right.
Can I
just mention a couple of them? If you ever wanted to drag the infield, which I've thought about, that looks like fun.
And you're with Roger Bossert.
All right. That would be fun.
Sodfather.
The best.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You can change the base.
Yes. You're also again with the Sodfather and all of his crew.
Yeah.
Deliver the lineup card to the umpires. Explain this one.
That's very fun. You get to do it pregame. So it could be like the two of you, Bill, mm-hmm. Wendy Show, can be on the field. Mm-hmm. And
by the way, get mm-hmm. two listeners to join us.
Yeah, we'll talk to Mr. Grimm about that for you.
All right.
But so you would be there, you would be with whichever coach is going to walk out to the field when the umpires come out, and then you would hand the lineup card to them, and the pictures are taken with our photographer Ron Vesely, and it's so much fun because the umpires go over everything on the field. They're like, okay, so if the ball's hit in left field in this corner, if it does this, we're gonna call it this.
Yeah. I mean,
and that you hear this stuff that I've never heard and I don't want to know.
Yeah.
But they talk about it.
Oh.
And it's really fun.
Oh, it would be fun.
It's very fun because you get to see a lot. And I also include for the lineup card to have probably dinner in the Bards room.
Look at that. What was the package you were telling us about off the air? Remember? It included tickets and it wasn't that much money.
Oh, you got a game ball.
Oh, the game ball experience.
Yeah.
You can deliver the game ball to the pitching mound before the game. Our photographer takes a photo of you doing that as well. And it's kind of nice because you're on the field and we try to put your name up on the scoreboard.
Oh,
that's outstanding. How about this one? Go to the Wisconsin Dells with Chet Lemon. Tell us about that one.
I'm not sure about that one. I think somebody was drinking too much Budweiser when that
one
came up.
Right.
I don't know.
That's just a dream of mine.
Now, this isn't a bidding thing. This is something you can go and purchase. Where do we go? And there's a sale going on right now?
Yes, we have 6 experiences that are on sale. That sale will end June 30th. You can call 312-674-1000 and ask to speak to Martha Jo. I'm the mm-hmm. only Martha there.
Mm-hmm.
As well as we also mentioned the Goose Island. You can call that 674-1000 and ask for group sales, and they can help you with that.
When you're not in, does Martha Plimpton sit at your desk and take your phone calls?
I need to find her.
Yeah,
because
she should be doing
that. Yeah, because that's 81 games, 12 hours a day.
Right. It's a long schedule.
Yeah.
It's a long schedule. There was I'm not going to name names, but there was a free agent or two that was available during the offseason that the White Sox were thinking about and sadly did not get. Mm-hmm. Was the mood a little sullen around White Sox Kingdom for a day or two or not?
No, it wasn't sullen. It was, I think it was more like, oh, wow.
We don't need them.
Players ask for a lot of money.
That was a lot of money.
Yeah, and you know, and it's funny. I think my dad made a max of $5,000 a season.
What?
And had jobs in the offseason. In the 52, that was a lot, though, for 6 months.
I guess.
And they all had jobs in the offseason.
Yep.
So that's a difference. But it's amazing that I think the free agency, our baseball department, does an amazing job. But I believe that we have such a good core, and our minor league system is so strong that we'll be okay.
All right.
And there's going to be other free agents that come up.
Sure. There will be.
You know, so.
And they have, we know they've got some money somewhere.
Right.
So when a free agent comes that looks like the right fit, they'll plug it in.
Exactly.
All right. Good.
I have never liked the Cubs there. I'll just say it. I never have. I've always been a White Sox fan.
Not even Ernie Banks?
Yes. I'll give you Ernie.
Okay.
I like individual Cubs.
Okay.
Just not the team as a whole and the fan base.
Just not a fan. Okay. And Bill has said. You just walked me into a corner.
Yes, I did.
Bill is the only person I know who says, I like both teams. And I'm like, come on.
You're
a Chicago fan.
Yes.
Yeah, I hear that too. Yeah.
Yep. Hold your thought for a minute. We go to the newsroom and Steve Bertrand with some breaking news.
We've been following the shooting at a hotel in Rockford, and just a briefing from police. The person responsible has escaped and is driving a light blue or silver car. We do have a member of law enforcement who has been shot. It was a U.S. Marshals task force. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that it was a U.S. Marshal who was shot here. They take police officers from a variety of agencies, but there was an ongoing effort here to serve a warrant at this hotel. One member of law enforcement was shot, and the shooter, armed with a rifle, has escaped. He's described as a 45-year-old man. Police want people to be cautious and aware of this, not necessarily in the immediate area, because he was able to drive away in his car. And in fact, it happened close to the interstate, so they're not clear exactly which direction he might have been going. But clearly, this man should be considered armed and very dangerous as they sort things out in Rockford this morning. We'll have more coming up in the news at 11.
Thank you very much for keeping us up to date on that. We'll continue to do so. Tough to follow that. Martha Jo Black in the studio with us. Your book is More Than a Dodger, Martha Jo Black, about your father, Joe Black. And if people, I can't even remember. Oh, Bill is truly a fan of both teams. But I don't typically believe people like that. I do believe you because you love baseball.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. I think that if you love the game, you can be a fan of anybody.
Right.
And I didn't grow up being a...
Not the Cardinals, but almost anybody.
Okay, almost. Okay.
Right.
That's true, but I grew up... I liked individual players.
Yeah.
My dad raised me that, unfortunately, as back in the day, players were loyal.
They would stay with the same team for years and years and years.
Because it's about who's going to pay me more, and that's normally where they go to.
Yeah.
But I grew up liking individual players. Like, I liked Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
I grew up with him.
So you probably got some overlap when he was with the White Sox. You probably got to work with him at some point.
Oh, I definitely did. My dad was friends with Griffey Sr.
Mm-hmm.
and his wife, Birdie. So it was more of a family type of thing.
How cool that a father and son got to be in the same outfield.
Team. I know.
Seattle Mariners. They played right next to each other. That's never happened before. It may never happen again.
No, it's like amazing.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a lot of good players out there, and I definitely think, going back to the free agent thing, I just think that Rick Hahn and Ken Williams, they do such a great job that they know who's going to fit the best with the personalities that we have now.
And personalities is key, because I will give the Cubs credit. We knew their names. We knew about them. It seemed like a fun bunch of people. That's happening over a guaranteed rate right now.
Yes. No, it definitely is. We definitely want people to get more in touch with who they are, so they can feel, oh, I know about you. I know your wife is having a baby, because you saw them at Sox Fest.
Yeah.
So you know they're a little bit more personable, but our guys are really fun.
Good. We're hoping for good things, not just this season, but for many years to come for the White Sox. We really are.
And thanks to Martha Jo Black, my partner Bill Leff, to borrow a term from Ed Farmer, he always talks about his partner, DJ. You have never looked more handsome in that new White Sox hat.
Thank you.
And it's the Batterman logo, which is one of my favorite of all time.
Mine as well, and you do look amazing.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
Now be nice
Thank
to me
you.
Today.
Absolutely.
All right.
With this hat on, sure.
Let's go White Sox. Are you busy April 4th? You doing anything?
I think I'm 110. I may be a little bit busy.
Yeah.
But you can maybe try to come for lunch.
Such a pleasure to meet you. Keep in touch. Fan experience sale going on right now. If you're a White Sox fan, this could be it. How do we get this experience?
Please call me at 312-674-1000, or you can email soxexperience@shysox.com.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Martha.
Thank you.
Joe.
Have a great day.
Go Sox!
Coming
Woo!
Up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. He'll tell you all the latest details on what's going on in a Rockford situation right here on WGN Radio. Wendy, you know what today is? It's Favorites Day. We just talked about our favorite baseball team, the Chicago White Sox. Now one of our favorite, not just comedians, but people on the whole planet, Tim Kavanaugh, is here. He's sitting right over there.
I thought we said that about Dean Richards.
We also said that about Dean Richards. It's all today's Favorites Day.
Okay.
Hi, Tim. Welcome to Favorites Day.
Hi. I don't know which microphone I'm supposed to talk in.
That one is not on for
Hold
some
on.
Reason.
All right, then this one. Then I'll use
try
this
one. Yeah, try that one.
Yeah. I was not told where that comes through.
Because Bob...
That's not working either.
Bob Fukuda.
Try it again.
Fukuda.
Who I just met. It's very, very nice.
All right,
nice
your mic is... He's not talking into a live mic.
Am I not talking into anything
We
right
thought,
now?
Tim, you would bring your own sound system.
You know
we
what?
We were under the impression that you were going to bring your own sound system. Hold on.
Which mic would he be talking into?
What should I be doing?
We'll have this figured out.
You're talking into this one, so say hello. Say hello.
Hi. Hello.
Oh, that's a little better. Hello.
No, that's not better at all.
Not any better.
Oh, I see. We're going to do
that. See, the mic is the microphone.
For my guitar.
Tim, we're out of time.
Oh, my God.
We're completely out of
Thank
time.
You for
Thanks
coming
for coming by. You were fantastic.
This actually went better than I thought it would.
Can you set me up for a little reverb? Are you going to want some reverb?
No.
Are you sure?
What
okay.
about, some,
comedy,
what about some rebar? Would you like some rebar?
I would like some rebar.
We can
get
you a little
pool
bit.
I've got some bar.
You can't... How long in was it?
What?
90 seconds?
A minute and a half, yes.
What?
Nothing.
Swearing?
It's a little side bet Bill and I have.
Wendy, by the way, has given up swearing for Lent, Tim. No,
That's
you won't
fantastic.
Hear her swear at all for
yes.
Lent.
Oh, my God.
But then the day after Lent, stand back.
No, she's going to be storing that
yes.
up.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's new ones coming out.
Oh, too. Yeah.
New swear
you know,
words?
Yeah,
yeah
always
year.
During Lent, you hear a lot more swear words.
Webster's releases their new swear words for 2019
because
right after
people
Lent.
Are mad that they had to give up you know, candy
yep.
and stuff like that. They get really, yep. really testy.
It's true.
So
I'm always really testy. So really, you're not going to notice anything different.
It'll be subtle. It'll be so subtle.
But see, that will be good because, you know, Jesus didn't swear.
No, of course not.
You know, he would
he
say,
swore a
he
little?
Would, once in a while, he would say, you know, to Peter, hey, could you pull around my ass?
What?
Because that's what he was riding.
Oh, his donkey.
His donkey.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
I could see
but
him
back in
that.
Those days, right. that's what they called it. That's what it was.
Really, the day after Ash Wednesday.
Tim, remind...
That's not a swear.
Remind everybody that you used to teach
that,
Sunday
I did not
school.
Use that as a swear.
Please remind everybody you were a former Sunday school...
I was a former
school.
Religion teacher
yeah.
at Maria High
yes.
School. And I did that for 3 years. You just...
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
That was not on the air, Tim, so you can just ignore me.
Okay, that's
no this one.
That's cool. Okay, that's right. I'm supposed to be a professional guest and just
can you play your
everything
guitar? We're just
going to
do an air check on the air. I want to see where that is mic'd because it's a guest.
Strum a little something for us so we can hear how that'll sound. Oh, that's going to sound great, Wendy.
If I can find which mic it's on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably on one of them. Just
yeah.
turn them all up.
Turn them all on.
What could possibly go wrong with that?
Yeah, Bob, right. come on in here, Bob, because you
Bob.
Just need to point out which one's coming
oh,
where,
right
and then
there too.
And
right.
then everything will be hunky dory.
This is like a scene from Star Is Born.
This is very
right,
like
I
one of the
I
edited scenes from Star Is Born.
His vocal is mic 3, and then where's the guitar? 4, 5, or 6?
4.
Four.
And if Wendy wants to play the harmonica during the song, Bob, which mic would she be on?
Got it.
Is this better now?
Yes.
Okay.
I just needed
Thank
to
you.
Know that. Now we can begin.
Now we'll start.
Thank you, Bob.
Tim Kavanaugh joins us right
no,
now.
You're doing,
one of
you're
our
doing,
favorite comedians.
You're doing fine.
Tim, the reason you're here is, A, so we can check all the mics and know which ones are working and which ones are
sorry,
not working.
I'm sorry, guys.
Most important
and
thing.
B, you have a big show coming up in Frankfurt at CD and Me, don't you?
I
a week
do that
from Friday?
Saturday night.
A week from Saturday.
Which is
already?
Great.
Yeah.
Already, there's. I think we've lined up about 120 Frankfurters are going to be there.
Hot dogs?
Yeah.
What's weird is that is the night we turn the clocks back. So are you going to do an extra hour?
You legally have to do an extra hour.
You know what? Well, it'll be my same act twice.
So?
But that's people okay, because as you know, I don't change anything.
How long has it been?
No, I'm just joking. There's a lot of new stuff.
Right.
There is.
All the Watergate stuff, that's new.
The Beatles broke up.
You talk about that.
It's all coming back.
Got a guy in the moon now. You got to address that.
I do address that. There's a lot of stuff. You're right. You know, because my act is very, very fresh.
Yeah, you have to keep it fresh.
As are you.
Yeah. Yes.
The Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup.
That's what we're hearing.
A while ago.
You do a little skit on that? You do some skit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
A skit?
I got my Harry Carey imitation.
That'll be fun.
Can you give us a sample?
Lloyd Pettit impression?
That people really, really
shot
like.
Shot in a goal.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
A little Harry?
No, I don't really do Harry.
No.
Why do I believe everything he says?
Because I say it's so convincing.
You're very convincing.
I used to be a teacher. See, we were talking about, I taught religion in an all-girls Catholic high school, so it's not being disrespectful with that joke.
No, of course not.
I'm just kidding.
You know, but you are convincing.
Because I was very serious as a teacher. Although, you know what? Whenever I taught, I was teaching high school girls.
Yes.
Girls, and it was mostly like freshmen.
Yes.
13-year-old girl. Very nice.
Yeah.
You know, really, really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tried to teach them something practical
along
with the Bible.
That's a good idea.
So, like, we had the story of Adam and Eve, and I told them, I said, well, Eve made two mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, she ate the forbidden fruit.
Oh, yeah.
Number two, she settled for the first guy who came along.
That is practical advice.
That's practical advice.
It really is.
You don't have to do it, girls. You really don't have
to do it.
So you mixed religion and common sense.
Yes, I did.
You put them both together.
Yes, I did.
That's brilliant.
I used to tell riddles. Because I tried to make it entertaining.
In a religious setting, you would do riddles?
Yeah.
Like what?
When Jesus comes back.
Yes.
The second time.
Yes.
What car will he refuse to drive?
All right. I don't think I know this. Wendy, do you know this? When Jesus comes back for the second time, which car will he refuse to drive?
Do you see the wheels turning? I don't know.
I don't know what it is.
The Anti-Chrysler. He will not get in that thing. A whole line of cars.
Right,
he'll get into
good.
A Jeep. Which I guess is the same company. I don't
it's
know.
Similar.
Is it Daimler Chrysler? I'm not up to date with all the mergers.
The clocks move ahead, by the way, not back. So really.
So you have to do zero time.
Show.
You don't have to do any time at all. They'll introduce you and you can just get paid and leave.
Well, it's kind of like this show.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of like, boy, I didn't do any.
Spring ahead,
funny.
Fall back. Sorry, everyone who's
texted
me.
Wow, what a great night this will be for you,
yeah,
Tim.
Yeah, it will be good.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a little break. And
already?
Then, yeah, we have
the
to take
The fun has just begun.
The fun is just now starting.
I got stuff to do.
I know. You're busy. You're very busy.
I got a pile of stuff.
Tim Cavanaugh is performing at CD and Me coming up next weekend. To get tickets, Tim,
this weekend.
This weekend.
Saturday.
Yeah?
It's sure? March 9th.
All right.
Time is moving along really fast.
Yeah.
We're going to lose an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or gain an hour. What do we?
We lose an hour.
Okay. It's up to you.
All right.
Whichever you want to do.
Spring forward, fall back. But you could fall forward.
I have.
And spring back.
Right.
I've done that too.
I mean, we've all done that. So that thing doesn't make any sense to me.
All right. Tim will explain more about the time-space continuum when we return. Phil and Wendy and WGN.
People in all the land is with us, Bill. He's Tim Cavanaugh, and he has a show this Saturday night, March 9th, at CD and Me. I was curious as to where that was. It's in Frankfort.
It's in Frankfort, yeah. You drive south on LaGrange Road, and just when you think, oh, I must have passed.
Yeah, then you're there.
There it is. Then it's like, oh, I didn't miss it.
And then on Friday, March the 15th, you have a show in Urbana,
Illinois. At a place called the Cackle Shack.
I love it.
The Cackle Shack.
Wow.
It came down to between the Cackle Shack or the Chortle Yurt. And they went with Cackle Shack.
Remember Jay Leno said he used to work at a club called...
Yes. Yes. And I worked there too. But
that was a good club.
Yeah. And they actually have a sneeze guard right up front.
So well, they're very germ conscious.
They should be. With a name like...
Right.
All I can think about now is the chortle yurt. That's all I can think about.
That'd be
Thank
a good
you,
club,
Tim.
No, that one, they didn't go with that, so that one's still available.
That's all I can think about.
Tim, a special request, since we brought in the Army Corps of Engineers to work on the sound system, could you treat us to a song?
You know what? I would love to do a song. All right. You know, whenever I find out that I'm going to be on Wendy and Bill.
Yes.
And that's, you know, when I get the sweepstakes notice.
Yes,
it's
right.
Like, okay, it's my turn. I always like to prepare something.
Yeah.
And last night at around 10 o'clock, mm-hmm. I said, boy, I should have a new song for Wendy and Bill. And so I wrote one. And so this is like the first time I've ever done
this. No one's heard this
anywhere.
Before.
No.
All right.
All right. So,
this is new.
This is scary.
All right.
Is what it is.
Sure.
Lightfoot and Preckwinkle running for mayor should be a great race like Peyton v. Sayers. Progressive women at a time apropos, though my favorite progressive woman is Flo. I mean, she's got that name your price tool.
Yeah.
Which is a great idea.
Great tactic.
Maybe not for Chicago politicians so much, but Texas and guns, the Obama library, airport expansion that gets all O'Hare-y, schools and corruption and Tom Ricketts' dad. These are the problems our next mayor has. Be it Tony, be it Lori, I'll be feeling glad. April the 2nd will bring a new day and bring to an end those ads. I mean, I swear it's been like 18 months of stinking commercials for these candidates. And if I hear one more, I swear, I mean this, I'm going to write in Manny Machado. I mean, that's be one way
to work.
Pay attention
it's
to Chicago
work.
For once.
It's got to work.
Aww. That was good.
That
was really
that was
good.
Delightful.
Thank you.
Do
you
it
know
again.
What?
Do it one more time.
I'm not.
No, you're done. You're,
I don't
you did
think
the
I
one.
Should do that. You did, I don't think I should.
Listen, fake people
Thank
are
you.
Applauding.
Wow.
Only a few.
You know what? That is very reminiscent of so many of my
when
shows.
When you play the big auditoriums, that's probably the sound.
That's about what I hear. That's what I hear. You know what? I did a show at the Surf Ballroom.
Where is that?
In Clear Lake, Iowa.
Yeah.
It was the last room that Buddy Holly played.
Oh.
Before the plane crash. And I'll tell you what, it was kind of eerie, you know, because I swear during my show, I could hear crickets. You know, that was his backup band, the Crickets.
That was a joke that Dick Clark would have enjoyed very much if he was still with us.
I'm so sorry. I am so sorry.
No, you're the first. That's the first Buddy Holly joke on the show all week.
It's a little soon, though.
Well played. Yeah, it's too soon. Please.
It is a little soon. You know, speaking of too soon,
yes.
All right, this probably is too soon. But, you know, we've lost some people since the last time
yes.
I saw you.
Yes.
And one of them was Penny Marshall.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always hard to explain, you know, why somebody dies.
Mm-hmm.
But at least with Penny Marshall, you could kind of see the grand plan. I mean, she was just part of God's give a penny, take a penny program, which I thought was interesting.
Dick Clark would not have enjoyed that joke. That would have upset Dick Clark immensely. You know that.
I know. I had to balance that out.
Right.
Because I don't want, believe me, when my act is all stuff that Dick Clark would have liked,
right.
Then I'm out of the business. So
That's your last day in show business.
And Bill, here's another interesting thing.
What do you got?
And I'm addressing this to Bill more than Wendy.
Can Wendy
right.
listen,
I'm
going to
listen.
Wendy's in the room, Tim. Can she at least hear it?
Yes.
All right.
All right, good.
Thank you.
Because I know that Bill is quite an excellent tennis player.
Thank you.
And a tennis fanatic.
Yes.
I was reading that today is the birthday of Czechoslovakian tennis star Ivan Lendl.
Yeah, today's Lendl's birthday. Yeah.
He turns 58. He won 8 Grand Slam titles. But I think his biggest victory came in 1981 when he beat Vitas Gerulaitis, the disease that killed his father and grandfather. I mean, that's inspiring.
That is very inspiring.
I think ESPN did a 30 at 30 or
right.
whatever that show is called.
Glad I was listening because that was worth it.
But that wasn't even meant for you, but you
it
enjoyed
was
that.
Still great.
That was fun. Thank you.
No, I'm just saying they're making great progress in curing that.
Yes, they are.
That's good to know.
So,
yes.
And I'm going to donate all of my proceeds from the Bill and Wendy show. From the Bill and Wendy show.
Proceeds.
Everything you earn today.
I talked to Larry, and I... Okay, never mind.
You're fine.
Because I'm one of your favorites.
I thought.
I thought that there might be
a little bump in salary,
some compensation.
No, we don't have any. There's no budget on the show.
Yeah, we have
Tim.
No budget.
If there was a budget, we'd be happy to.
Then I don't feel so bad about some of the jokes.
No, you're fine. You're absolutely fine. How are you handling the cold weather? Has it been awful for you, or have you been okay?
It's awful. It's terrible.
It's too cold.
I'm so tired of it.
Yeah.
And it should end.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, God has a plan, and it will end.
Yeah.
Did you teach that in your class?
Yes. Tom Skilling would come in.
Yeah.
And while he wasn't really big into, you know,
the religious end of it,
the proselytization part of
yeah.
it, as soon as he left the room, I'd say, now that's all because of God.
Yeah. He tied it all in nicely.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, you know, trying to make it real.
Yes.
For
accessible to the masses.
Anyway, it is cold and windy and nasty.
Yep.
And I've been traveling all over. And fortunately, I've been pretty lucky. I only got stuck in one kind of storm.
Oh.
And it was one of those, it was a really windy day. And I was coming up on I-65 out of Indianapolis. And I don't know if you know that road, but when it's windy and cold and rainy,
treacherous.
It's awful.
Yeah.
So the road was freezing. I knew that because I have a little temperature thing in my car that Tom Skilling recommended that I get.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's external. I mean, it's not built into the car. But
Tim, a Cylon warrior is sneaking up on you from Battlestar Galactica. Don't turn around. It'll scare you. Don't turn around.
All right. I'm okay.
So what happened?
I'm okay.
So you had this thing in your car that Tom Skilling
recommended. This is all new equipment, relatively,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We'll have it fixed.
Anyway, I was driving, and I thought, there's something wrong with my car.
Yeah.
Because it's like I was going like sideways because it was so windy.
You're blowing
and it
around
was,
on, the,
it's
on
like,
the roadway.
I don't know if there's, maybe this is just sheer ice underneath me. And so I pulled over into a church parking lot.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a very, very smart move.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked for sanctuary. And I lived there with a Guatemalan woman for...
For how long?
For a month and a half.
For a month and a half.
Until the weather blew over.
And then you were back to normal.
Yeah.
How about that?
Exactly.
Nice to hear.
What an inspiring tale that was.
You know what? My job here is not to be funny, but to inspire.
That, you did.
That's what you do.
You inspired all of us. Go see Tim Cavanaugh, would you?
If you want an inspiration.
That's the place to be.
Rather than funny.
Saturday, March the 9th at CD and Me. It's on LaGrange Road in Frankfort, Illinois. Their website is cdandme.co/events.
Yes, yes. Here. You know, they could not afford the M at the end.
It's a very expensive M.
You know, they're very, very trendy there.
There are a lot of different dots now.
Yes.
So dot co.
Yes. That,
you know what? I have a bad printer. Is
what oh, is that
I
what
have.
It is?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a guy, he knows cursive too, but I just hire him to print.
Wendy gave up cursive for Lent, Tim.
Cursing.
Oh, cursing. I'm sorry. Tim, great to see you. Thanks so much for coming
Thank
by.
Thank you very much, you
Thank
guys.
Thank you.
I always have fun
it's
with you.
Tim Cavanaugh.
We do too.
Yep. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news and then more show. Stick around, Bill and Wendy on WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then he's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys, Dean.
He's Dean, and he's here with us
he's
right
Dean,
now.
He's Dean, Wendy. We can't debate it. He is Dean Richards. Dean, you did something so nice today. You went back in time, didn't you?
I did go back in time. I built a time machine, and I went back and changed the course of World War II.
But you went to the theater you went to as a young boy. You hadn't been there in a while, and you went back.
This is, I did my live reports this morning on the TV news from the Avalon Regal Theater. Back when this theater opened on 79th Street on the south side, it was called the Avalon Theater. It was in 1927. I didn't go there in 1927 because I wasn't born yet.
Right.
But it was a vaudeville theater first. It's one of these beautiful old palaces that was a vaudeville theater and then became a movie theater. That's when I went there. And saw my first movies there. It's the first theater that I ever went to. So, you know, the very first movies that I ever saw were at that Avalon Theater, I would go with my brothers. They would begrudge. I have three older brothers. I'm the youngest, so they would begrudgingly have to drag along, you know, their little baby brother with, and they didn't want to. So the second that we got to the theater, they would ditch me.
Oh.
And you know, I'm sitting in the movie theater. I have no idea where they went. You know, probably up in the balcony smoking or who knows what.
Those kids.
But and I'm sitting there, literally, I'm like 7 or 8 years old. And we used to go there and see Jerry Lewis movies and horror movies, you know, whatever the horror movie of the day was. And I think it was a Boris Karloff movie. I think it was Pitt and the Pendulum.
Oh, sure. Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, something super scary happened. And I remember being so scared, I screamed at the top of my lungs and ran out into the lobby of the theater. Oh. And I sat out in this lobby for the rest of the movie because I was so scared and waited for my brothers to come back so they could walk me home because I was too little to walk home by myself. Yeah. Well, that's what I remember. But I know we went and the family would go to, you know, see the movies when they came out, How the West Was Won.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like some of the great classics on this enormous screen. Through the years, the theater went into disrepair and was renovated in the early 1980s and became a live performing theater. And was given a new name, the Regal, in honor of the old Regal Theater that was at 47th and what is now King Drive. So they renamed it the Regal, and anybody who was anybody in R&B, rap, hip-hop, soul, even more than that, appeared and played at the Regal Theater. I saw many acts there. I saw many Motown reviews. I saw Stevie Wonder there. I saw Patti LaBelle blow the roof off the place back in the day, you know, when she had a new attitude. Well,
that would explain the disrepair, Dean. You blow the roof off the place, you got to fix it.
You got to fix a roof that's been blown off. Anybody knows that. That's simple mathematics.
And isn't it Kanye West who's kind of funding this repair job?
Yes. Yeah. Kanye donated $1 million. I mean, say what you want about Kanye.
Yeah.
He also grew up in this theater, seeing acts in this theater, and it means something to him. And he donated $1 million toward its renovation. So this young entrepreneur who bought the building out of foreclosure, I think it was like 7 years ago, something like that. He's trying to bring the theater back and make it a performing arts theater again, and theater and, you know, someplace where community groups can do theater and so forth. It's kind of cool to see, you know, what's happening of trying to bring this theater back. What's also interesting is that a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed Tyler Perry.
Mm-hmm.
Got his final Madea movie is out. He is on a tour right now doing his final Madea stage show. And that Madea stage show, the Madea's Farewell, I think it's called, is at the Erie Crown Theater starting tonight through Sunday. So I know Tyler Perry is a huge Bill and Wendy fan. He mentioned that.
He
mentions that to me all the time. I'm trying to talk about his movies, and all he wants to talk about is Bill and Wendy.
Oh.
And does she really take probiots?
Yes, I do tell him.
He asks me all the time. Oh. He's a huge fan. So he may be listening.
Oh, Tyler.
Tyler Perry may be listening.
Hi, Tyler.
Tyler, if you are, go back. He told me this is where Madea started, at the Regal Theater. He's in town. Go back home. Pay him a visit. And while you're there, write him a check for $1 million, too. He carries that around in pocket change.
Dean, when I was a young boy, my brother took me to that theater, and we were watching a Tyler Perry movie, and I was so scared that I ran off into the lobby, and I stayed there.
Madea's nothing to mess around with.
No.
I understand that.
No. Uh-uh.
Yeah,
well, what a great experience for you today.
Have you ever gone back to an old house or your old school, you know, or something like that? It's surreal to walk into some place like that and be in these surroundings now as a grown up, you know, and just you can practically see your little self running around the theater, goofing around with your friends. You know, my friends and I, we got older, we would go there ourselves and, you know, goof around and just run all over the place like we own the joint.
Dean, my dad always tells stories, and I know there's a huge age difference between my dad and you, but he says when he was a kid, on a weekend, on a Saturday, he and his friends would go to a movie theater, and they would see three movies back to back to back, plus like newsreels, which they would show between the movies, plus commercials and stuff that they would show in the theaters. He said you'd be at the theater for
all day, eight,
9 hours.
Yeah, I'm sure that was part of the thinking of all the brothers going to the theater, together in our house, because we would go on Saturday, and you would get. I know for sure that we got some. It was either Three Stooges or Buster Keaton, or something like that. Some of the old movie shorts. We'd get some of those. I know that I was introduced to the Pink Panther cartoon.
Yeah.
They would show a couple of those every week, and then they would get to the main feature. And, you know, usually it was a Jerry Lewis movie or, whatever the, movie was of the day. Mm-hmm. Back in the, this would be in the 60s and 70s. And, of course, horror movies that left me traumatized. the thing about it is now, all my brothers are much older than I am now, and as they always have been. But, eventually I'm going to be in charge of their health care, and payback is not going to be free for them.
Good. You have to have a plan. Good.
I was thinking back. I think my first movie at a theater was at the Olympic Theater in Cicero, and my grandma took me to see Funny Girl.
I think that was
my first movie, and I loved it.
Right? Yeah, isn't that amazing? And I believe that's one of those beautiful old, gorgeous.
Ornate.
These movie theaters were like palaces.
Yep.
Just
the
so
velvet
intricate.
Seats.
Like palaces.
Right. Curtains then, would open and close before
yes,
the main
feature.
Yes, you
could see the screen behind it. Yeah. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Magical.
And everyone's got... I think, most everybody of a certain age who grew up with a theater like that, whether it's on the north side or out in the suburbs. I was just out at the Tivoli in Downers Grove on New Year's Eve with Steve Cochran, and the Paramount Theater was a vaudeville house that became a movie house that's now live performing. I hope that this Avalon Regal Theater at 79th and Stony can follow in the footsteps of the Paramount and become successful. It's the biggest theater south of the Loop. It's like 2,400 seats. It's an enormous theater, and it's a shame that it's not being used to its full potential.
Yep, no doubt about it. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and then Dean will tell us what movies are coming out this weekend. That's coming up in just a little bit.
All right, we, Bill and Wendy, are talking to Dean Richards. All right, Dean, you're at your microphone now.
Damn. It's amazing, isn't it?
After you're traveling
you don't sound winded or anything.
I always sound like that. What do you mean? I always sound winded.
Dean, this weekend, the Marvel version of Captain Marvel is coming out, but I find this fascinating. For years and years and years, DC Comics and Marvel Comics have each had a character named Captain Marvel, and no one's done a movie version of it. There was a Captain Marvel on Saturday morning kids TV for a while.
I remember that.
Yeah, and that was fine, but now there's a movie version of the Marvel Captain Marvel coming out, and then DC's version, they're calling it Shazam, I think, is coming out soon. Why did this happen? Why did both companies put out similar characters at the same time?
It's amazing, isn't it? Especially in that Marvel is in the name of the character.
Right.
Why DC would even, do that? Maybe it was just to poke the bear,
maybe.
I don't really know, but I know that it was tied up in litigation for a long time, and that's why Marvel was not able to do a Captain Marvel anything for a little while, because it was tied up in litigation between the two. But that was finally settled. Once it was settled, Marvel didn't even really want to do anything with it, but they had to. They had to do like two or three like comic books, a little something, just to be able to hold on to the rights to the character and the name. And then it was, finally, I don't know if DC lost interest or, decided to, move on to their own things. I'm kind of looking forward to this Shazam movie that's coming.
They both look good. Both versions look good.
Yeah, Shazam looks like it's going to be a little bit like Deadpool, sort of the very irreverent kind of superhero movie. But Captain Marvel is, I think, really well done. Everyone was a little bit surprised, and now that I've seen it, delighted that Brie Larson takes on the role of Captain Marvel that you might think might be go to a male actor instead of a female. But she does just an amazing job with this character, who is, you know, this really is an origin story. It kind of, at least half the movie explains who she is and how she got to be the way that she is. She is, you know, someone who is believed to have been from Earth. Her blood was fused with an alien race, the Kree race.
They're bad guys.
They are bad guys, and but it gave her superpowers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men, if I may borrow from the Superman legacy on that, because she developed superpowers, and because of those powers, then was trained in an elite Kree military squad. So she became sort of Kree as a result of it, and in fighting off bad elements in the universe, battle took them to the planet Earth, set in the mid-90s. And this is where a battle royale goes on. And the movie, it doesn't really break new ground, but it's done really, really well. It's really fun. The action makes sense. The action's the effects, everything are just really great. But what is the real key to this movie are, number one, Brie Larson's complete charisma. She is so likable in this role. As she's kind of, it doesn't really remember what her past is, trying to search for it. She is just absolutely charismatic in the role. And what this movie does for female empowerment, for girl empowerment, run this weekend and take your daughters, your nieces, and go see this movie. It's one of the best, right up there, I think, with Wonder Woman.
Oh, good.
In telling young women, especially girls, especially, you can do anything, you can be anything. That's the overriding message of this movie, which is great. Jude Law's in the movie in a supporting role, but Samuel L. Jackson, who is in just about every Marvel movie there is, a little bit, is featured a lot more in this movie. So it's great to get a little bit more of his character, Nick Fury. What they do is de-age him in the movie. When you see Samuel L. Jackson in this movie, he looks about 30 years younger than he does in real life. With special effects, they were able to digitally take the years off.
That's excellent.
So when I talked to Sam Jackson and Brie Larson a couple of weeks ago, I said to Sam Jackson, "Where do I go sign up for that?" I'm all for that. Whatever it is, I'm
you want
all for
in
some of that.
Dean, are there any scenes in this movie where the superhero learns that they have superpowers but is reluctant to use those superpowers?
Well, there are scenes in this movie where the superhero learns she has superpowers but has to learn to harness them.
I would like to see that in a superhero movie.
Yeah, that would be a little thing with Captain Marvel. You know, these young superheroes, they're exploding stuff all over the place. They have no control. You know, they go to yawn. You know, they go, like do their arms like when you yawn, and blow up two buildings on either side of them. You got to control yourself when you're Kree,
right?
When you're part Kree,
Kree Larson.
You got to be careful,
right?
So
true.
Yeah, so I liked it. I gave it a B+.
That's excellent. And this really is part of the ramp up to the Avengers movie that's coming in a couple of months. That's going to be the biggest movie of the year, probably, right?
The Avengers movie?
Yeah, part two of that.
Yes, I think that will be the case. The Avengers Endgame is what it's called. Is going to open April 26th, which is, it's not that far away right now. So, yes, that'll be part of it. And, you know, these are the ones, the Avengers movies are the ones that, push the envelope, change the bar, change everything. But, you know, this Captain Marvel movie, it kind of felt like it was just going to be sort of a quick add-on.
Yeah.
Especially because of the... you know, the history of the Captain Marvel universe of being sort of ignored by Marvel, now owned by Disney. They did a really good job in, you know, telling the story and putting this out there. It's a really fun movie.
I'm anxious to see it.
Yeah, B plus for this one.
Excellent.
There's another movie. It's a little foreign movie that's opening, and I feel like I have to mention these now that Roma did so well yes. at the Academy Awards.
You are required by law.
Here's another film that you're going to have to read and not sit back and enjoy. It's called Climax. This is about a group of Parisian dancers you know, having a fun night of the expression of human form mm-hmm. until somebody spikes the sangria with LSD.
Oh,
why do they do things like this?
Yeah, and then everything just goes off the track. I didn't like the movie. I like that it's such a goofy premise.
Yeah,
and it's all in French.
Oh,
by the way,
you sold. Ooh, I'm sold. Yeah. Dean, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend.
That's Dean Richards. A little break, then Wendy and I are headed toward the stream. But you have a chance to either join us there, or you can stay right here and listen to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch. Two good options coming up. The stories that matter with Eric Rung from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, right here on WGN Radio.